Create an instant playlist based on your interests and how long you want to listen with the Discover feature on the WNYC app. Listen anywhere, even on the subway. Download the app at wnyc.org/mobile.
Type wingsuit flying into YouTube and you'll turn up dozens of death-defying videos of daredevils leaping from high places and cutting through the air like flying squirrels. These feats are not only remarkable, they're also incredibly dangerous, which is probably a big part of their appeal. In Bird Dream, Adventures at the Extremes of Human Flight, Matt Higgins tells the story of skydivers, base jumpers, and wingsuit flyers who have pushed the boundaries of human flight and even made forays into parachuteless landings. It's published by the Penguin Press, and I'm very pleased to welcome Matt Higgins to our show today. Hello.
Hi, Leonard. Thank you so much for having me.
What's the difference between skydiving and base jumping? And base is spelled all in capitals.
Yes. I assume everybody knows what skydiving is. BASE is an acronym, and it stands for Buildings, Antenna, Span, which are bridges, and Earth, which are cliffs. And those are all the stationary objects that BASE practitioners jump off of with a parachute.
They jump off of tall buildings and bridges, you're saying?
Yes.
Which is usually illegal, isn't it?
It can be. There is a bridge over the Snake River in Idaho, the Prine Bridge, and it is legal to jump from that bridge 365 days a year. But in most places in the U.S., it is illegal to jump from a bridge, and unless the building owner grants special permission, it's almost always illegal to jump off of a building.
Early in the book, you note that people have jumped off objects with primitive parachutes for centuries.
Yes.
So this goes back even before Leonardo da Vinci?
Well, if you think about it, before aviation, people were parachutes existed before aviation, and they during the Renaissance, people were jump out of high towers as a life-saving device in the event of a fire, and they would test these methods out. Once hot air ballooning was developed, people plunged out of hot air balloons with parachutes. So it wasn't, of course, until aviation was developed in the early 20th century that skydiving and parachuting really took off.
Have parachutes changed much over those years?
They have changed. I mean, the materials early on were just sort of found materials. Oftentimes silk was used. Silk was an effective way of making a parachute. In more recent years, about the mid-20th century, kite design was used to develop the modern parachute. The modern parachute is essentially an airfoil. It's a flying wing. And prior to that, the chutes were tended to be round and didn't provide for much steering.
When did wingsuit flying begin to take shape? It seems to me it's a combination of parachute and glider.
Yes, wingsuits, the modern wingsuit operates on the same principles that the modern parachute operates on. You have wings under each of your arms and wings between your legs, and the air rams in vents in the front and creates these little wings that provides glide. There are really two eras of wingsuits. In the early days of aviation, air circuses were popular, and they would travel around the world and thrill crowds, live crowds, with these stunts, skydiving, and some of these early air circus featured performers were they developed their own homemade wingsuits. They were oftentimes they failed spectacularly, and most of these men wound up perishing. It wasn't until the mid 1990s that a Frenchman by the name of Patrick de Gardin developed the modern ram air parachute ram air wingsuit, which again mirrors the modern parachute, and it really made these devices a lot safer and they performed a lot more reliably.
What did he do that hadn't been done before?
Well, he used a kind of ripstop nylon, which is what is used in parachute design, and he created these vents he sewed the wings underneath the arms and between the legs, and these vents allowed the air to ram in and gave the wings an actual an actual wing shape, as it were. The early incarnations were just imagine canvas stretched, you know, as tight as you could.
You don't flap your wings, but you can adjust how you fly, can't you, just by body movement?
Yes, just by turning your head, just by looking to your left, you can fly to your left. There are all kinds of maneuvers that some people perform somersaults in midair and then continue flying. It's really spectacular.
Your story follows Jeb Corliss, one of the leaders of the sport. How did he become interested in base jumping?
He saw it on MTV when he was a teenager, and he was just captivated. He had always dreamed about flying as a child, and when he saw base jumping, he recognized that that came pretty close to what he had imagined. He was too young to begin his training. You have to be 18 in most places to start skydiving, and then it takes years of skydiving training to be proficient enough to attempt a base jump.
And he tried his first off of a bridge, off of Sacramento, the American River?
Correct. That was his first actual base jump.
What was his family's reaction to this? He, as I understand it, he was a rather troubled teen. Did they see this as a positive or a negative interest?
His mother was worried sick initially when he went on his first base jumping mission up near Sacramento. She stayed up worried, wringing her hands in his bedroom the entire time until he returned. And eventually she came to terms with the fact that he was going to continue doing this whether she liked it or not.
You're right. By risking his life, Corliss knew he would win something else, psychic relief and a growing sense of self-awareness and confidence. And then he began to show interest in wingsuit flying. So did that also have a psychological impact on him?
I think so. I think for someone like Jeb, there's always a push to find the next thing. He's driven, and he's the type to push the envelope. And wingsuit flying offered him an opportunity to really push the envelope and do things that very few people had ever attempted before.
We have a photo of him about to jump from an exhilarating height in Norway on our website. We also have some videos on our website. My guest is Matt Higgins, who has written a book called Bird Dream, Adventures at the Extremes of Human Flight. The aerodynamics of this, you say, are similar to what Da Vinci learned with his Vitruvian Man. You have to take pretty much the same pose?
Yes, in order to stretch your wings, you do kind of take that Vitruvian Man pose, and that's how they've learned that the wingsuit functions best.
We're talking about falling, but what about speeds? Can't some of these wingsuit flyers travel faster than 100 miles per hour?
Yes, easily. They can travel in excess of 150 miles per hour in a dive. It's really nothing for them to travel 100 miles an hour or more.
In the unlikely event that I might want to become a wingsuit flyer, how would I practice for the jump? But just jump off of a chair or something? Or is it even possible to practice? Do I have to just put on a suit and jump off the nearest cliff?
It's not something that you can just try. You have to start out as a skydiver and become really proficient, make hundreds of skydives before you can ever even entertain the idea of base jumping. And then if you do it the right way, you would take what's called a first jump course, and they teach you everything you need to know to make your first jump. And typically that's done off of a bridge because there's water beneath. And if your parachute opens the wrong direction and you're flying back the way you came, you usually go under the bridge. That's if you jump off a building, for example, and your parachute opens off heading 180 degrees, you're headed back at that building.
Smashing into the bridge.
You've got problems, yeah.
So it's not just a matter of smashing against the ground. You could hit a building 100 stories up and also kill yourself. Now, what has made Corliss one of the top people in the world? What's he jumped off?
He has jumped off of the Golden Gate Bridge. He has jumped into a deep 1,000-foot cave in Mexico. He has jumped off of the Eiffel Tower. He has jumped off of Table Mountain in Cape Town. He even attempted to jump off of the observation level of the Empire State Building in 2006.
There's somebody else who's now planning to do that, isn't there? Who is planning to do it with all sorts of secret things so that he can get up to the observation level? A fat suit?
Yes, that was his method. He was able to slip past security and...
But he was caught.
He was eventually caught. He had climbed over the safety bars on the top of the observation level, but the security personnel who were they were looking for him. They had been tipped off that somebody was coming. They reached through the bars and grabbed a hold of his parachute harness and held him until they were able. Police came and he was eventually arrested.
You note that Corliss's shtick tended to get him under the skin of some of his peers. They don't like the fact that he's a publicity seeker. Isn't anyone who does this something of a publicity seeker?
That's one of the ironies of the sport, is that it began as an underground activity, and it still retains that spirit. Initially, because many of these jumps required trespassing or other illegal activity, the base jumpers learned that they couldn't tell anybody what they were doing or they wouldn't be permitted to do it. So they began sneaking around, and that just became part of the culture.
Well, Philippe Petit had walked across the old World Trade Center towers, and he is one of the most celebrated people in the world these days. I guess these people are hoping for the same kind of recognition? Or is it just that they love the tremendous adrenaline rush?
I think they would do it without the recognition. Most base jumpers and wingsuit pilots do their activities privately. They don't publicize it. Jeb Corliss has made a career out of base jumping and wingsuit flying. And in order to do that successfully and satisfy his sponsors, he has to get attention for the stunts that he does.
And you can wind up getting, sponsors. Red Bull is one of the sponsors here?
Yes, Red Bull is one of the big sponsors. That would be a major get if you were able to get on their team.
Have psychologists looked into this, figured out why danger feels good for some people, whether there are, it may be a genetic basis for this kind of risk-taking behavior in certain people?
Yeah, there is some research that suggests that there is a genetic component, and researchers have identified a dopamine receptor, the D4 gene, where it correlates with novelty seeking, which is similar to thrill seeking.
There are some terrible stories that you tell here, people who die in horrific ways. One particularly disastrous incident involved Corliss and Dwayne Weston in Colorado. Without getting too graphic, can you explain what happened?
Well, they were at the Royal Gorge in Colorado, and they were going to be the featured act, the finale at a festival, an extreme sports festival, and Dwayne Weston and Jeb Corliss were going to jump out of an aircraft at the same time, and they did. The plan was for Dwayne Weston to fly over the Royal Gorge Bridge, which was packed with spectators, and Jeb would simultaneously fly beneath. And then they would deploy their parachutes and land in the canyon safely. During the course of the flight, Weston took a much lower trajectory than they had planned, and he wound up striking the bridge at high speed, and it obliterated him. And as it happened, Jeb was flying just beneath him at the time and was kind of showered in his tissue, and it was a pretty grisly scene.
Some of these things sound kind of crazy. Also, an English base jumper named Gary Connery decided to land on 18,000 cardboard boxes.
Yes.
Now, why 18,000 rather than 17 or 19,000? And what makes cardboard a particularly good landing substance. He was doing a parachuteless jump.
Correct.
From what height?
2,400 feet.
So how fast are you going?
Well, at that time, he was traveling at about 10 miles an hour down and 60 miles an hour forward. He was able to perform a flare maneuver to reduce his speed. This parachuteless landing in a wingsuit was something that some of the elite wingsuit pilots had set for themselves as a goal. And Gary Connery, through his experience in motion picture and TV stunt work, had done a number of high falls into cardboard boxes. That's a standard way for stuntmen to land because the empty boxes absorb your energy and you can...
They cushion it.
And Gary had calculated that he could fly his wingsuit slowly enough so that he would match some of the high fall speeds that he had experience with, and he figured that he could be the guy. As far as I think he erred on the side of caution. 18,000 versus he didn't want to miss his target.
Well, unfortunately for Icarus, there was no nylon around and no cardboard boxes. Wile E. Coyote, of course, winds up creating a hole in the bottom of the canyon. But these guys, at least the ones who succeed, they seem to be having a lot of fun. I'm not going to try to have that much fun myself. Bird Dream is Matt Higgins' new book, Adventures at the Extremes of Human Flight. It is published by the Penguin Press. And I thank you for being on our show today.
Thank you so much, Leonard. It's been my pleasure.